Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
All of you, some familiar faces, new faces. So we have, this is like I was telling Arlene, this is just like a limud, where I've taught at different limudim. We have 1 hour. 1 hour, and I'm expected to start on time and finish on time. So just to give you an idea of how I imagine this class will go within the 1 hour, we'll do a 1 minute icebreaker, so to speak, and then I'll more in lecture form review the handout that I'll be distributing, and then I have my phone set to go off at 12:30. Because, depending where I am, I'd like to give all of you time for Q&A. Because this could wake up certain parts of what's going on inside of your mind, inside of your heart, and I want to be able to give you that. So please, if you have a question as I'm moving through the material, I mean, I could do this in 3 hours, really. But I don't have the 3 hours. So if you have a question, jot it down. And then when the alarm goes off, hopefully I'll be towards the end, and we'll be able to have that opportunity. Okay? Sounds like a plan? Great. All right, so spend a minute, and then I'll distribute the handout. And then I'd like three volunteers the name of this is Developing Sacred Chutzpah. Class one, I'm giving a second one on Wednesday, when the queer voice challenges the status quo power construct. So I'd like you to spend a minute. And then after I'm finished distributing the text, I'll ask for three volunteers. Well, I'll ask for one, but if there's two, good. Three is even better. Mm-hmm. When you hear the word queer outside of the LGBTQ inference, what do you hear in a more broad, in a more inclusive way, yet it does not compromise the integrity of what the word means? What pops into your mind? I'd like to hear only one sentence answers. Is the question clear? You look puzzled. Okay, when you hear the word queer, what do you think of? In one sentence, outside of LGBT. Because in history, since the word, whenever it was discovered, it has much more of a history long before the LGBTQ world adopted it. So I'd like to get a sense of when you hear it, what do you think of outside of that? All right, so I'll give you a couple of minutes while I distribute this. Oh, this is being recorded. When we get to the Q&A at the end, if you don't want your voice recorded, let me know. I'll be more than happy to put it on pause. Okay? Here we go. Take one and pass. Okay.
Yes,
yeah. And then when everyone has their text, when everyone has the handout, then we'll all be quiet, and the three volunteers will give their answers.
Thank you.
have seats here. You have seats here. Don't be shy. Okay, so let's begin. I just want to re-mention, because a lot of new people just came in, while I don't really love the idea that this is only 1 hour, that's what was given, so we have to be grateful for what we have. So we're going to spend a few minutes answering a question. When you hear the words, so the title of this is When the Queer Voice Challenges the Status Quo Construct. So I asked a few of the people who came in earlier to spend a few minutes discussing, when you hear the word queer outside of the LGBTQ world, what does it mean in a more inclusive way? So it includes people other than LGBTQ. We'll answer that. We'll delve into that for a few minutes. Then I'm going to go more into lecture mode, but I have my phone to go off at 12:30, so hopefully I'll be towards the end of the lesson by then, and then I'll be able to open up the room for Q&A. So please, as we move through the text, put, if you have a question, write it down, and we will get to it, God willing, B'ezrat Hashem, at the end, in the last 15 minutes. Okay? So, three volunteers. Who's the first when you hear the word queer?
I think...
One sentence. One sentence answer. I know it's hard for a Jew to do that, but...
I think of weird and eccentric in a positive and perhaps artistic way.
Wait, does Accenture have two C's?
Yes. Okay.
You know what happens when you live here too long. When you live here, not too long. When you live here a long time, your English becomes worse, even if your Hebrew doesn't become better. Accenture. And weird, that's W-I-E or E-I?
E-I.
Gosh, I'm so embarrassed. Okay, eccentric and weird.
Yeah, positive and artistic.
Positive and artistic?
Yeah. Fit it all into one sentence, I promise.
Okay. Positive, artistic. Okay, volunteer. Thank you. Volunteer number two.
Different from the norm.
Different from the norm.
And also the word like other with a capital O.
Other. Like that. The other. Okay, one more. We have one more, maybe on this side.
Fluid identity.
Pardon me?
Fluid identity.
Fluid identity. Okay, now, your challenge as we move through the material is not only to understand it, or to at least hold it. By the way, I didn't introduce myself. I'm Yiska Smith. I'm blessed to teach here at Pardes. I also teach elsewhere in Nachlaot. I also have a private spiritual mentoring practice, and I lecture basically all over the world about topics like this. So what we'll do, so aside from hoping that you'll be able to connect to some of the material, if not all, I mean, I like to raise the bar, I'd like you to see where these words fit in to this text, to this handout. Okay? Have that like in the back of your mind as you're understanding the text. Okay, so this session is based, get my copy out. This session is based on the verse in Bereishit in Genesis 12:1. So I'll read it to you in Hebrew, and then you have the English here, because I think it's good for the soul to hear the original Hebrew. Is there anyone here, don't be shy, anyone here who's not familiar with Hebrew? Right. So even if you don't understand the words, your soul will. So just be open to that. So in Bereishit, book of Genesis, Yud Bet Aleph, that's the 12th chapter, the first verse. V'yomer Hashem el Avram, lech lecha, me'artzecha, u'mimoladetecha, u'mibet avicha, el ha'aretz asher areka. God said to Avram, go to yourself, away from your land, from your birthplace, and from your father's house, to the land that I will show you. We know after the fact, the land that I will show you is Israel. But Avraham, or Avram as he was called then, did not know that. This verse introduces to us the spiritual practice of Lech Lecha. So what I teach the spiritual practices. I look at Judaism influenced by the Rebbes, the Rabbanim, the Rabbanot, Rabbaniot that I am inspired by. I see Judaism as a spiritual practice. So within that, we cultivate different practices that support that, that nurture that. So this verse introduces to us a spiritual practice. And what is that? Moving away from one sense of self, the finite self, the ego-based self, the limited self, not a bad self, just a self, to another sense of self, the infinite self, the beyond ego self, the limitless self. But why would a person move away from the familiar to an unfamiliar and unknown destination? Why would Avraham, why would he do this? Why would he heed this? So the first response is from Rashi. Rashi explains, based on a teaching in Masechet, which is tractate in the Talmud, in the Gemara, in Rosh Hashanah, Tetvav Amud Bet, page 15, side B, that the command, Lech Lecha, is actually for our own benefit and for our own good. Now the Netivot Shalom commentary, that's the name of the commentary, Netivot Shalom, which means pathways of peace, was written by one of the more recent Slonimer Rebbes, Rav Shalom Noach Berezovsky, who passed away in Yerushalayim in the year 2000. So it's quite a contemporary Perush. He provides a fascinating insight in light of the Rashi commentary, which believes that the Lech Lecha call that every one of us may feel really is for our own benefit. This is what he teaches. He teaches that notwithstanding that engaging in the Lech Lecha journey would be for Avraham's own benefit and good, from Avraham's vantage point, this was not even a consideration. Out of his strong love for God, Avraham felt compelled to obey whatever God had commanded him to do. In fact, he did not even consider that by responding to God's command, the very next verse would be fulfilled. And the very next verse says, again, I'll read it in Hebrew. It's the second verse, Yud Bet Bet. Ve'escha l'goy gadol v'avarechecha v'agadla shmecha v'yeh bracha. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. So really, if that was told to any one of us, and it meant moving out of the comfort zone into the unfamiliar, not so much of a comfort zone, many of us may say, well, if this is what I'm going to get, I'm there. I'm with the program. Why not? But according to Netivot Shalom, that was not even a consideration for Avraham. Avraham did what he did, withstanding what was considered to be a major test in his relationship with God, with no expectation of receiving a reward. So we see here, so that was the Rashi and Netivot Shalom commentary. Now, the insight that I'd like to share with you, that's my insight, is that we see here that Avraham is the prototype of how one responds to a deep inner calling. Have you ever felt that a voice within you tugs at you, urges you to take the next step along your journey in a way that is nothing less than surprising and unexpected? And we actually heed that inner voice without needing to know all the details that lay ahead, the benefits, and perhaps even the general purpose. Just think to yourselves, has that ever happened to you? It's happened to many of us. That's the Lech Lecha call. Actually, the calling may very well defy logic and our previously acquired experiences. The compelling reason, according to this teaching from the Netivot Shalom, stems from love. Love of self, love of God, love of clarity, love of whatever it is that moves us. It's from love. We'll hold that for a few seconds. Now, the Ramban, Nachmanides, 13th century leading medieval Jewish scholar, points out that nonetheless, because he was after Rashi, long before the Netivot Shalom, but in light of Rashi's commentary, quoting Masechet Rosh Hashanah, that it would be for his own good, What the Ramban teaches us, and it's very compassionate of him, very supportive, the space he holds for Avram. It is difficult for someone to leave one's homeland, even if you feel compelled from within, even if you don't have to have all the promises of the good that will come as a result, even if you don't have all the clarity. You know you have to do it, as Avram did. He had to do it. But what I love about the Ramban commentary, it's still hard. It's still difficult. It could be frightening, actually, but you still do it. To leave one's homeland, even harder to leave one's extended family, and hardest of all, to leave one's parents for an unknown destination. Yet, some of us, some of the time, heed the inner call to do, the inner calling to do so. Now, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, meaning the most recent Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who passed away approximately 24, 25 years ago, he asks in a talk on Shabbat Lech Lecha in 1989 the following: what drives a person to leave his aretz, his land, his birthplace, moledet, and the house, his father's house, his Beit Av? For what? For an unknown destination. Yet driven we are in search of something more than what our parents, teachers, indeed, our very nature that we were born with and our very genes have to offer. It almost transcends that. Our lives are a ceaseless search for identity. And I want you to hold this. This is the emphasis here from the Rebbe. It's a ceaseless search for identity. Looking into the spiritual mirror of identity, who am I? Having rejected the inborn and acquired identity of our birth and youth, how many of us have grown up beyond gender, beyond sexual orientation, beyond the LGBT understanding of this? How many of us have grown up with acquired and assigned expectations? And yet, it doesn't really define who we are, or it may define a part of who we are, but not in our entirety. So the Rebbe continues and acknowledges that, quote, by conventional standards, the development of one's natural instincts, the assimilation of learned and observed truths, and the remaking of self through the objective arbiter of the mind constitutes the ultimate in human achievement. So we would think that that person who has achieved that, that person would have all the answers to all those questions as he or she gazes into the spiritual mirror of identity. But the Rebbe says no. There is, however, a higher self to the human being. This is the spark, Nitzotz Elokut. It's the spark of God. The word Nitzotz, it's just a beautiful Hebrew word, like a spark. It's not a fire, but it's the beginning of a fire. We each have that inside of ourselves. So this spark, this Nitzotz of God, this spark of godliness that is the core of one's soul, this is the divine essence that God breathes into each one of us. This is the Tzelem Elohim. This is the very image of God in which each one of us has been created. This is the land, this is Haaretz, that God promised to show Avraham, and by extension, all of us. So what was he asking of Avraham? I want you to leave a familiar place, a finite place, a place where you can even sense achievement and astounding achievements, but I'm going to introduce to you a different place. And that's where I will show you. I can't tell you, in essence, God is saying to Avram, I can't give you the answer now because you need to be on the journey in order to discover the answer, because you're part of the answer. And that's going into discovering who we are deep inside, this nitzotz, this soul that we have, this image of God that we've been created in. So the Rebbe refers to this spiritual work as, quote, transcending one's own positive and gainful past in order to reach beyond oneself, regardless of how perfected and achieved the lower self is. And isn't it exquisite how the Rebbe actually really affirms and acknowledges that the potential of the limited self, of the finite self, that in of itself is a reason to be amazed by the human being's achievements. But we can even go beyond that. We can even go beyond that. God, he teaches that human perfection, what we call human perfection, is simply not enough. And you know why it's not enough? Because it's finite. Because eventually it ends, and then we need to redefine another goal, another what do I want to achieve? Where there's a part of us that outlives our experience on this planet Earth. God invites each one of us to experience that which actually transcends all limit and definition, and that is one own soul. So as much as we get to know our soul, we keep getting to know our soul. It's endless. So we move from a finite space, as great as it may be. And again, I want to acknowledge how the Rebbe acknowledges. I think it's exquisite how he doesn't demean the ego-based or the finite part of a person. He actually really praises it. But that's not the end all. The end all is to go even beyond that. So I believe that what the Rebbe is suggesting here is an answer to the question, what constitutes how we define ourselves? When we gaze into the mirror of, you know, did I put this on? Is it on? Yeah, okay. I just realized. I believe that what the Rebbe is suggesting here is an answer to the question, what constitutes how we define ourselves? When we gaze into the mirror of our identity, what do we see? What defines who we are? A body? A soul? Both? Ego? Beyond ego? For the Rebbe, the essence, the essential ingredient without which the human would not be human, defines the real oneself. For him, this is clearly our soul, our spiritual center, the image of God in which each one of us has been created. As we move from the lower self to the higher self, and what I like to refer to as a limited consciousness into an expanded consciousness, into a space more of scarcity to a space of abundance, from a space of I can't, I won't, I shouldn't, to a space of I can, I will, and I must. As we move from that to that, there is an exquisite, beautiful midrash that describes what happens as we move along our own personal Lech Lecha journey. Actually, its premise is that the journey never really ends. Well, it can't end because it's a journey that leads us into the infinite part of ourselves. If we so choose, we are always moving deeper and deeper towards our authentic selves. It's like peeling the onion. And we keep peeling Admeya Ve'esrim until we all live to be a healthy 120. Just keep peeling and peeling and peeling. In Bereshit Rabbah 39:2, Lamed Tet Bet, we learn the following. Rav Berchia, so this is the teaching in the Midrash. Rav Berchia commenced with a verse from Shir HaShirim, which is the Book of Song of Songs. Right in the beginning of the Book of Song of Songs, this verse comes from chapter 1, verse 3. So I'll read the verse in Hebrew. L'reach shemanecha tovim, shemen turak shmecha. Your ointments have a good fragrance. That's l'reach is a fragrant. Shemanecha is your ointments are good. Shemen, your name is as an ointment poured forth. That's the shemen turak is to be poured out, Shmecha, your name. So what does that mean? What does that verse mean? What did Avraham resemble? What did Avraham resemble? A vial of perfume closed with a tight-fitting lid and lying in a corner. Now, for those of us who either buy perfume, wear perfume, like perfume, we know if we buy or someone buys for us a bottle of perfume, if it sits on the shelf closed, we don't smell it. I mean, that's obvious. So what do we need to do? We need to open it, All right. That's also obvious. But he's using that as a metaphor for what's not so obvious. The metaphor is, you'll see, so that its fragrance was not disseminated. However, as soon as it was shaken up and the lid removed, the beautiful fragrance was disseminated. So the Midrash continues, similarly, the Holy One, blessed be He, said to Abraham, Lech Lecha, I'm going to shake you up. You're like a vial of beautiful fragrance, based on that verse in Shir HaShirim, that's closed. So I'm going to shake you up, remove the lid, travel from one place to another place, and your name will become great in the world. So we see here, how I understand that, and this is my understanding I'd like to share with all of you. We see here that as we journey, as we travel inwardly in the inner terrain and discover our inner selves, I may add our queer selves right here, the soul within us, as we open up that hitherto closed part of ourselves, we release a beautiful fragrance into the world. Each one of us has our own particular wonderful fragrance. But unless we shake it up and open the vial containing it, we are limited in how much beauty we can really bring to the world. Hence, the spiritual practice of moving towards our authentic, genuine, deeper selves embodies the potential to beautify the world, to enhance the world. And because this work is difficult at times, like the Ramban says, as he teaches, it brings as well compassion to the world. You know, the ingredient that compassion is nurtured from is our sufferings, difficulties, those troubling or trying moments. As we move through them, it really nurtures, really feeds the midah of chemla, or rachmanut, compassion. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who's a contemporary, at one time he was the chief, till recently, till a couple of years ago, the chief rabbi in the UK. He's actually now a lord. He was knighted. Right? He's Lord Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, writes about what happens when one claims a piece of oneself that now characterizes the person as being different from the status quo. Different from the norm. I think it was over here somewhere. Different from the norm. Did you read Rabbi Sacks' article? That's okay. No, that's okay if you did. great, right? When one claims a piece of oneself that now characterizes the person as being different from the status quo, causing one to be considered a nonconformist. Eccentric, weird, positive, artistic, other, fluid identity. I love that fluid identity because everything we just learned in the Midrash is like your whole journey is one of fluidity. Right? Causing one to be considered a nonconformist. He begins in his article, The Courage Not to Conform, by stating that, quote, leaders lead. That does not mean to say, though, they don't follow. It's one of the biggest misnomers in misunderstanding a leader. We think leaders don't follow. Actually, they're the best followers. And because they're the best followers, we follow them. Because the way they follow makes them leaders. What they follow is different from what most people follow. They don't conform for the sake of conforming. They don't do what others do merely because others are doing it. They follow that inner voice. They follow the calling from within. He continues, never was this more dramatically signaled than in the first words of God to Abraham. The words that set Jewish history in motion. Lech Lecha. Why? Why would he say that? Because people do conform. All of us in one way or another. There's nothing evil or wrong or immoral or unethical about conforming. Depends what you conform to. It really depends what you... Write down your question. I know that you, different people, I can feel it. But just write it down. All right. Never. So Because people do conform. They adopt the standards and absorb the culture of the time and place in which they live. That's your land. That's Artsakha. At a deeper level, people are influenced by friends and neighbors. That's your Moladetcha. That's your birthplace. More deeply still, they are shaped by their parents and family in which they grew up. That's Beit Avicha. These are the three places that influence us the most as we grow up. And we bring that, for good, for bad, ups and downs, positive, negative, places of breakage, places of pain, places of celebration. We bring all of that into adulthood. So what he's saying is, I want you, says God to Abraham, I want you to be different. I want you to be queer. I want you to really be queer. Not for the sake of being different, but for the sake of starting something new. A people that will not worship power and the symbols of power. For that is what idols really were and still are. I want you, said God, to teach your children and your household afterward to follow the way of the Lord by doing what? And this is the key phrase, what is right and just. I'll read it to you in Hebrew. It's in Bereshit Yudchet. That's chapter 18, verse 19, Yudchet. Yitzaveh et banav v'et beito acharav. What? The Derech Hashem. The way of Hashem. Why? La'asot tzedakah u'mishpat. Tzedakah u'mishpat. This is what? You know, the whole book of Genesis all preceded the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai and Mount Sinai. And that happened several parshiot into the book of Exodus, into the book of Shemot. So what is the value? What is the meaning of the book of Bereshit? It established for us through the Avot, through the Imahot, the patriarchs, the matriarchs, what we refer to as a godly consciousness. A godly consciousness became the vessel, became the receptacle to receive the Torah at Har Sinai. This right here is the beginning of cultivating a godly consciousness. And a godly consciousness in the Jewish, at least for sure, how the mystics and how the spiritualists understand it, and even the Balei Musar. What it involves is, in a life of service to something greater than ourselves, it's to infuse into the world tzedakah u'mishpat. Tzedakah u'mishpat. Just try to imagine what life was like 4,000 years ago, 3,800 years ago, surrounded by so much violence. This was the chidush. This was innovative. This was radical. This was mamash queer. This was really challenging the status quo power construct. The whole idea of tzedakah and mishpat. To be a Jew is to be willing to challenge the prevailing consensus when, as so often happens, nations slip into worshiping the old gods. Judaism is a sustained critique of power, Rabbi Sacks explains. It is about how to construct a society that honors the human person as the image and likeness of God. It is about a vision. It's a chazon. It's a dream. It's a chalom. A vision of a world based on justice and compassion. Tzedakah u'mishpat. And chemla, rachmanut. Abraham is one of the most influential people who ever lived. You know, he's popular in Islam, he's popular in Christianity. Yet, he ruled no empire. Think about this for a minute. He ruled, as Rabbi Sacks brings to light, he ruled no empire, commanded no great army, performed no miracles, and proclaimed no prophecy. He is the supreme example in all of history of influence without power. Why? Because he was prepared to be different. Leadership, as every leader knows, can be lonely. Yet you continue to do so. You continue to do what you have to do because you know that the majority is not always right. And conventional wisdom is not always wise. So So it is with conscience and courage. This is what Abraham had. And this is what Sarah had, that they bequeathed to us to reach deep inside where we have a conscience, where we have courage. So it is with the children of Abraham. They are prepared to challenge the idols of whatever age we live in. And it's the Rambam teaches, it's from, I believe, also from a Midrash, but it's brought down by the Rambam, Maimonides, that Maasei Avot Siman Labanim, that everything that happened to the patriarchs and by extension the matriarchs is a sign for us. So it's not just there was Abraham and Sarah and there's me over here. No, a piece of me is Abraham. A piece of me is Sarah. These stories are about us. They're not just about someone else in our history. So one reason, he says, why Jews have become, out of all proportion to their numbers, you know, we make up less than 0.5% of the, by however you define who is a Jew, be the most liberal. With that, we make up less than 0.5% of the world population. I don't even know what that means. Less than 0.5%. And he says one reason why Jews have become, out of all proportion to their numbers, leaders in almost every sphere of human endeavor is precisely this willingness to be different. Judaism is the countervoice in the conversation of humankind. As Jews, we do not follow the majority merely because it is the majority. It is what makes a nation of leaders. We're a nation of leaders, not only a nation of followers. Every nation is a nation of followers, but we also are a nation of leaders. All right, I just have to tell this one joke for a minute. I think I have time. So years ago, during when Nixon was alive and Golda Meir was alive, she was very close with him. At that time I was in undergraduate school at George Washington University, so I always knew when she was coming to visit the White House, because GW is very, very close to that area, you know, a few blocks away. So whenever she would come, they would raise the Israeli flag, and it was very evident she came to him a lot for whatever reasons. And this is the joke. This is the Masoret. This is not etched in stone. I don't have a source for this, all right? But ex-President Nixon, may he rest in peace, said to her, you know, you come here more than any other leader. You're always welcome, because we're friends. But I lead, at that time I think the American population was 200 million people, I lead a country of 200 million people. I don't come running to you half the amount of time that you come running to me. And you have a what? You have an Israel. I think at that time there were maybe 4 million people. Oh, she said, but you don't understand. You have 200 million followers. I lead 3 million leaders. You know, so when he says this, you know, when Rabbi Sacks says this is what makes a nation of leaders, Am Yisrael is a nation of leaders. So I want to conclude that section by saying, may we bless each other to find that peace within us that defines each of us as a leader of our own particular magnificent life journey. By hearing the Lech Lecha call within, remaining faithful to it and heeding it. And may we as well encourage each other. This is so important. And to encourage each other to heed their individual Lech Lecha. Because each one of you, as many of you as there are in this room, that's how many different Lech Lecha calls there are. So it's not enough that I muster up the courage and the conscience and the wherewithal, the trust to go deep inside of me. But once I start touching that, it's a mandate for authentic spiritual, at least within the Jewish context, and by extension, to be a real human being, to encourage others to do the same. Not to demand, not to expect, but to be there on the sidelines as each other's cheerleaders. You can do it, you can do it, and you can do it. May we as well encourage each other to heed their individual Lech Lecha call and not be gripped by fear when moving along the path of the nonconformist. Now, I was careful to say, use the phrase, gripped by fear. The Lech Lecha journey, there are moments, as the Ramban said, that are difficult. You may experience fear coming out of whatever closet one is coming out of, and to be more genuine and more authentic is not, well, now I'm out and here I am. Hi, world. This feels great. No, there are at times where we are really afraid. It's to be not to be gripped by it. You know the difference? When we're afraid and we say, you know, God, I need you to work with me here. I can't do this alone. Please, this is your journey for me. I'm a little bit afraid. Can you muster up my bitachon, my trust, my emunah, my faith, so I don't feel so alone? Just by that, we're less afraid. But God forbid to say, I'm afraid, therefore, you know what? I'm not going any further. So I really bless us that we never become gripped by the fear and be open to experiencing your fear as you move along your own Lech Lecha journey. All right, we have good. A few more minutes. In conclusion, Reb Shlomo Kalbach gives us the spiritual tool that prevents us from confusing, and some of you may have this question, from confusing the self-absorbed voice we all possess with the call to arms of Lech Lecha. How do you know it's just not all ego-based? I feel this, I feel that, it's all about me and my Lech Lecha. He teaches in his Sefer Evan Shlomo, God says to Avraham, Lech Lecha. Avraham, keep on moving. Always be moving. In light of that midrash that we learned in Bereshit Rabbah. While many people may be moving, though, how do you know if they're moving in God's direction? Remember, God said, you go where I show you. Well, how do I know I'm going where God is showing me rather than where I'm showing me? I'll tell you something, he continues. If you are moving in the direction of God, the more you move up, meaning towards the land that God shows us, the closer you move to people. Don't tell me you move so close to God and suddenly you are away from people. And you know, friends, the acid test is like this. If you want to know if you love God even more, go out onto the street. Go to Rehov Agrippus, Erev Shabbat. Go to the Shuk, Erev Shabbat, when it's like Safuf, like this. And see how you behave and how other people behave. What is it you see? Are you blowing your mind over every human being you see who is created in God's image? If so, then you're okay. You really do love God more. But if you walk on the street and every human being you see you think is disgusting, this one's ridiculous, this one's obnoxious, then gewalt, are you walking backward? You're walking backward. We all need so much to move closer to God, to move closer to people. That was the real Lech Lecha call. That's the force in the pasuk of what Avraham, his resource that he had was to teach his children what? Tzedakah u'mishpat. This is what connects us. This is what brings us closer. Years ago, I'll conclude on this note. Years ago, and we're right on schedule, 12:29, so I'm going to turn the alarm off. This is great. Okay, hold on, because we don't have to hear it. Right. So years ago, I was driving on some high-speed road when I was visiting the States, and the car in front of me had a bumper sticker on, and I noticed it. And I didn't realize how profoundly it would influence my own life. It said, it's not God that I'm afraid of. It's those who say they love him. I mean, how much hatred, how much bitterness, how much separation, how much disconnect there is in the world in the name of I love God. So what he's saying here is, if you follow the Lech Lecha call and go deeper into yourself, how do you prevent yourself from that? See if you can connect to more and more people. If you can't connect, if in the name of loving God, your life becomes like this, you need to pause and do a spiritual stock-taking. Something is not right. Something is not happening that should be happening. So he concludes by saying, but above all, Lech Lecha, keep on moving. Don't stop. Don't ever, ever stand still. Get closer to yourself, to the deepest depths of you, and get closer to every human being. Thank you. Okay. Now. Okay, great. I appreciate that. But now let's move to Q&A. Now, if you don't want it to be, if you don't want your voice to be recorded, just say before. So then I just put your hand up when I say you, and then I'll pause it.
I think that you're my secretary.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah, keep going.
I think on my own personal journey inwards, I think I struggle with knowing when to listen to my voice, when to listen to an external voice. Because the hard truth is, sometimes you shouldn't listen. And sometimes there's external wisdom, and there are external norms, different from the norm. Sometimes it's important to be different. Sometimes it's important to think, well, maybe I don't want to have so much pride as to think that everything I think is like it's words from God, you know?
So you're absolutely
how
right.
Do you balance the humility with the pride that enables you to go on this individual journey?
Well, you know, Rav Kook writes in a sefer, it's actually in a booklet called Pinchas Yerushalayim. He wrote it shortly before he passed away, and it was never even published. It was found in his study after he passed away. And it was towards the end of his life, he wrote that every person has their own maslul, their own path, their own unique path. And he said someone else's path is not your path, and you can only come to fulfill the reason for which God created you on your path, regardless of how wonderful someone else's path is. However, someone else's path can inspire you. So it's not what I believe in light of that teaching, what's being suggested here, is not that I don't learn from other people. It says in Pekei Avot, Ezehu Chacham, Mishu Lomed B'Koch Havayro, right? So every one of you are my teachers. You know, it looks like I'm the teacher. You're really all my teachers. Mm-hmm. However, at the end of the day, I have to live with my conscience. I have to live with my accountability to my Creator. You can inform it by your journey, by your authentic journey. But the real answer is, according to how Reb Shlomo explained, Reb Shlomo Krabach, is when you make decisions based on what you believe to be your journey, is it preparing you? Is it allowing you? Does it support you to be more in the world? Or is it causing you to close down? Do you connect or do you disconnect? Do you live a life of more, like it says in the Pasuk, Mishpat, Tzedakah, Mishpat? Or is it a life of Shiput? Like, this one's not kosher enough, this one's not Shabbat enough, this one's not this enough, and this one. At the end of the, who are you left with at the end of the day? You. Then you know that voice is more of the ego. And the ego is not evil, but the ego is the survival instinct, the instinct to survive. That's what the ego is. So there's that part of us that's very self-centered and very selfish, and we need to pet it, we need to take care of it. You know, when you're hungry, you need to eat. That's why you should eat and have a drink before you engage in a selfless or beyond self endeavor. Take care of the part of you that is demanding attention right now, and then move to the part of you that's more spiritual or more lofty or more what you're really dedicating your life to. This was a chidush, by the way, in Judaism, in Torah, that when God came down, it says God came down to Har Sinai and Moshe went up to Har Sinai, there was a fusion. We no longer had to live a dualistic life. Either I'm a hedonist and it's all about me and my body and bodily pleasures and survival, or it's about I'm living a life of asceticism. In the name of God, in the name of spirituality, I'll ignore the physical world. Much of the world was like that. And then there was this fusion with God coming down and Moshe coming up. So that's part of an answer, Jason. It's not the whole answer. It's a part of an answer. One more thing. Be aware of yourself. Take a few minutes every day just to go over you. When you wake up, before you go to sleep, go for a walk, sit with your own self at home, go into some deep breathing for a few minutes, and just review you. You may be surprised.
Much.
You're welcome.
I have a question specifically on the texts you chose themselves. I'm feeling some discomfort with how beautiful Karl Bach's words were with the man that Karl Bach was. And I feel like there's a lot of dissonance between how he was as a leader and within these words here. So, like, how do you... with that.
Okay, so it's not really the it's not all the sources, it's just the last source.
Yeah.
Okay, so a few years ago, okay, I learned with him personally many, many years ago in the 1970s, 1980s. He was a profound influence on me. However, a couple of years ago, I took a step back and I did not teach any of his teachings. I wanted to see where all this was going. And now I've resurfaced because I believe his teachings still matter. It doesn't mean that his life, we know that his life, there was a complexity of a lot of darkness. There was a complexity where people were hurt. I'm not denying that at all. I'm not apologizing. I'm not defending. Actually, I'm not even going there. That in fact, his teachings to me have even more meaning because the man who taught them had demons that were very, very destructive. So this teaching right here, for example, this teaching has been with me for years, and it's in print in this sefer, that if my coming closer to my own Lech Lecha separates me from humanity, I have a big problem. And if it doesn't, then I know I'm going in the right direction. Now, I can separate the value of that teaching from the actions of that person. And I've worked hard to do that, being a sensitive person that I am. But for a few years, I wasn't able to teach his teachings. And then I realized, no, I have to. That's part of my Lech Lecha, or my Lechi Lech. Does that in any way make sense to you? Yeah.
So would you say that it's the same to have a calling to not do something versus to do something?
Yes, yes. Okay. And that's the wisdom of the Chazal in the Mishnah, Ezehu Chacham, Mishelo Made Mikoch HaVayro. Who is wise? A person who learns from everyone. Well, what do I have to learn from people that I don't want? I have learned some of the best teaching techniques from my worst teachers over the years. I'm serious. I'm not even saying this in jest. I've had such terrible teachers in my life. I've had some amazing. I've learned from all of them. What not to do has been as important in my journey as an educator, as a mentor, as a public speaker. That has been as important as what to do. Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time studying Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and that without your basic needs, like, you can't reach self-actualization.
Right.
And so what would sort of some Jewish approach be to saying, like, people who are, you know, it's easy for all of us in this room to go grab water and to get food, but people who are struggling, who have to, like, steal it, who can't possibly think of this spiritual journey besides, like, a tzedakah approach?
Okay, so this is, you know, the phrase al regel achat. That means on one foot. Al regel on regel achat, because most of us have 2 feet, thank God. And it comes from the story that a potential convert went to Hillel and Shammai and wanted to know everything in the Torah al regel achat. So Shammai was offended by the question and pushed him away, and Hillel on al regel achat gave his answer. So through the centuries, we have this phrase, al regel achat. I'll give you the short answer to that. Right. One is, you can't go further into a Lech Lecha if you're suffering from hunger and starvation and you have bodily needs and you're cold. There is a part of us that really needs to honor that. In fact, when we teach meditative practices, when I teach how to sit and meditate, go to the bathroom first, make sure you have drink water, sit in a comfortable position with good posture. In other words, put yourself in a space where you don't feel any of your bodily needs or your body. That's the ideal. That's the ideal. However, to your point, I can answer it through quoting the Piasetzner Rebbe. Now, the Piasetzner Rebbe, who's also called the Ish Kodesh, Rabbi Kalman Kalamanish Shapiro, Zichat Tzadik Livracha, he wrote 7 books. Actually, tonight I'm teaching from one of his books. He wrote 6 books in the town of Piasetzna, which is a suburb of Warsaw, between World War I and World War II. After the Germans invaded Poland, he, along with his whole community, was incarcerated into the Warsaw Ghetto. And then the town of Pisenson was destroyed completely. There's no remnant of it. And he wrote for 2.5 years before he was murdered. He gave weekly drashot on the Parsha and on Chagim. And this became known as Eish Kodesh. And to follow how he himself was moving through, there were even stories, witnesses who were his students who also passed verbally, orally through people who have survived, that it was so cold at times he had trouble writing because there were no gloves. But he had to write this because if he didn't write this, we wouldn't have it today. So his self-sacrifice was beyond what any of us could ever imagine. And he talks about when you're starving, when you don't have enough water, threadbare clothes, darkness, and he never mentions the word, by the way, in his commentaries, ever mentions the word Nazis. He just talks about darkness. When it looks like God is not present, only he could say this because he was in the middle of it. If it looks where God is not present, your avodah, what's being asked of you, your service at that moment, your practice, is to see where God is. Doesn't mean you're going to succeed. But you can either focus on the fact that you're starving, and people were, that you're freezing to death, and people were, or you can take that, and I say this almost with hesitation, but only because he was in the middle of it, and this was his experience, do I feel comfortable to quote it. So what he has allowed us to do is feel that no matter what our situations are, look, we don't have to, God forbid, starve to death or freeze, you know, be on the verge of freezing to death. We could have moments in our lives that are really, really pressing, really, really hurting, where there's a lot of stress and there's a lot of tension and there's a lot of breakage. Yet, from that space, we can still go into Lech Lecha. That's what we learned from his very life. I don't know how to answer your question if I would not have learned his Torah. That's how important your question is. Okay, I think we have time for... Yeah, we have time for one or two more.
Okay, great. So the piece that I'm struggling with is where you wrote that maybe as well encourage each other to heed their individual lechacha. Great in theory. And I'm wondering about a situation where you encounter someone whose truest and deepest and spiritual goal is directly in contrast with yours, or what you see as, tzedek and mishpat?
Yeah, tzedekah and mishpat.
At that point, what is our responsibility to continue supporting their
that's a great question. No, that's a great question. You can be supportive without agreeing. You can challenge. You can push back. I mean, it depends. I would have to have a specific. I'm not suggesting you give but think of a specific in your own process. Think of a specific example, and how you, if it's diametrically opposed to your core values, if it's really diametrically opposed to your very being, the way you understand your reason for being, from a place of compassion, what's demanded of us. Again, like with the other question, the fact that everything's divine providence. So if I'm engaging with someone and their whole life is not only contrary to mine, but diametrically opposed to how I believe I'm supposed to be living, I believe God wants me to connect to that person anyway, or in spite of it, or because of it. So that can only come from a place of compassion, not from a place of agreement. I don't have to agree with anybody. And I've been challenged. In my own journey, I've been challenged by some heavy hitters. And, it's been difficult, but with the practice, I've pushed back with compassion. It's a very, pushing back with compassion, just that idea of pushing back with compassion is incredible. It's just an amazing space to hold. And I think the last question, yes.
Yeah. Okay. On that lesson you're saying about pushing back with compassion, is like, how do you do that sustainably when the world, like communally, might disagree with your vision for yourself or what you're doing?
You know, someone just asked me something similar in my mentoring practice yesterday, something very similar to that. So we have today, for example, ways of communicating to our ideas to the world that we didn't have 100 years ago. We have podcasts, we have the written word. However, you can only communicate face-to-face to, you know, 40, 50 people at a time, one person at a time. We can't, it's not a matter of fighting the world. It's again believing that if I feel compelled to share my messaging with much of the world, that's what I'm supposed to do. That's why I go around the world and public speak, rather than just in addition to my teaching here at Pardes. I would rather just do more teaching here at Pardes than go to different parts of the world. But I have to go to different parts of the world, because if they don't hear it from me, they may not hear it. I feel that that's part of my Lech Lecha journey. But you're not going to change everyone's minds because that's what you want to do. You can't. But all you can do is the best you can. And the best you can do every day becomes more and more and more. You'll never outlive you or your potentials. So rather than take on the whole world, but you can, though, through podcasting, through writing articles, and making sure they have coverage, just how you live your life one-on-one with each person. It's amazing how many people you can really inspire just by how you start treating and engaging with one person. So if one person pushes back on you, how do you push back on that person? Is it filled with compassion? Do you feel you're bringing God into the narrative, into the discussion, where it actually God's presence informs it? I once met, and I'll conclude on this, a person who was really, she was quite, what's the word I'm looking for? Nasty. Really nasty. Really violent towards me. And I said, I know, I'm just concluding now, thank you. I said, you know, not only am I not going to defend myself, but I have to say that I'm really disappointed that someone in my generation, we're about the same age, feels it's okay to speak to me this way about something you don't understand. And you really don't understand me, because I don't think you have a full understanding of yourself to be able to talk to me this way. Because really, this is not about me at all. This really is about you. This has much more to do with you, and something in my life, how the decisions I've made, just brings, that's the mirror. You're looking into a mirror, and you're seeing a part of you that you have tried to avoid. I have no idea what it is. However, if you want to become more of an adult, being that we're both in our 60s, right, I'll treat you to the cup of coffee, and I would love to have a conversation with you. But I'm not going to sit here and defend myself. There's nothing to defend. That she looked at me like she was expecting a fight. And you know, what's the phrase? The best way to avoid an argument is don't. What was there to argue about? There was nothing to argue about. Unfortunately, she never called me up for that cup of coffee. And I was really hoping she would. All right, I bless you all.
Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit almad.pardes.org.